Wow, what an episode. This is actually the third time I've tried to record this intro because I am having real difficulty trying to do justice to what an amazing episode and how grateful I am to my good friend Alex Eck, who came on this podcast. And we talk about all the incredible work that he's doing. And right now you can access the end of COVID for free until the 11th of October. Alex talks in this about what this amazing event is, how there's over 100 hours of talks on actually what is health. It's called the end of COVID, but really it should be called the end of allopathic and materialistic medicine as we know it, and talks about the new health paradigm, including things like the exciting, amazing research coming out on water, homeopathy, the human biofield. Listen to it and please go and watch the end of COVID while you can for free. The link is below. Check out Alex's work. Alex, thank you for coming back on. I think this is your third time, so I really always appreciate it.
We're missing Chad right now.
Yeah, we need to. Well, you and him still need to have that podcast at some point.
I know.
About
vegan versus non-vegan. We do at some point.
Yeah, so it's just me today, but I was just saying before I hit record, actually, I'd really like to start this off, this conversation, by reading out an Instagram post that you posted yesterday.
Sure.
Just going from there. So, right, let me just find it. So, I love this post. Right. So, all the unjabs are going to be locked up and put in FEMA camps thing never happened. That all the jabs are going to die due to pathogenic priming in 2022 thing never happened. The something is happening on September 23rd never happened. The harmful frequencies will be emitted through our phones during the FEMA broadcast on October the 4th never happened. The truth the community is so ungrounded and frantic, continually distracted by the next thing instead of focusing on building what they want. And I just love that. I thought it summed up so what I think about the truth, the community. And I want to explore why you posted that, because you share a lot of truth, but I never put you in that. I don't like to label anyone, but in that.
Yeah,
camp,
I know what you mean. You know, you're just talking like right before we clicked record on that quote that like you relate to some parts of the, I guess you could say, like spiritual/consciousness community, but like buying into this idea that we're sending, you're just like, that's not it. And then you see the health freedom community. You're like, okay, I relate to them, but then they're still caught up in like with protesting the government and asking the government for permission. And they're still caught up with the germ paradigm. So I'm not fully there on that. And then there's like the truther community perpetually focused on like black pilling themselves. Right. And then always worried about the next PSYOP and what they're doing. Ironically giving the powers that actually aren't more power, you know? And it's like coming to this realization that you're not going to fit in perfectly with any one group, and that's totally okay. But at the same time, we as human beings desire community. And, you know, there's like a certain vibe of people, and you're one of them that you know, just get it on a deep level, right? Like you're a spiritual person, but you're very, very grounded, like not new agey, not thinking that we're ascending and like there's going to be a big solar flash that's going to happen. And, you know, if that does happen, great, but we're not like waiting on that or calling out dates for it or like perpetually worshiping crystals and things like this. We're not trying to escape being human. We're taking, you know, the divine beings that we are and bringing them into the now, into the present moment here in reality, right? Like grounded spirituality. And the same applies to all of these groups. And I think the reason that I posted something like that is because I, at a deep level, want to relate to the quote truther community or the health freedom community or all these communities, because there is pieces of me that agrees with them more than I agree with the mainstream. But then I see so many people who are still operating in a disempowered state constantly and are constantly being strung along instead of being grounded in their center and, you know, not shying away from the dark things that are happening in the world, but not perpetually focused on what they are doing and, you know, outsourcing all of their critical thought, let's say, to certain other truther accounts that are saying that they have exclusive knowledge from secret organizations and things. It's just, it's the ungroundedness. Let me think of how I want to say this. It's like this ironic thing where so many people who would consider themselves truthers understand, or at least they say they understand, that we create our own realities to a large degree, right? Like that we are the author of our own story. We are creating our own reality. We are co-creating this reality in this sort of dance together. And they say that on one hand, but then on the other hand, it's like this incessant obsession with fixating on whatever the latest thing that the mainstream or even the prevailing alternative narrative is talking about, instead of coming back to that understanding and aligning our thoughts, feelings, and taking deliberate actions towards what we want. And with that, like, am I always perfect? Absolutely not. Ironically, like, me making a point to call that out yesterday is me being distracted by it too and still playing that game. But it's like I find myself, I guess that's kind of the whole premise of the end of COVID itself, calling out the truth and the health and the freedom community for their inability to co-create, to focus on co-creating the reality that we want. And I don't know. That's where that came from.
No, I love it. And yeah, I agree with everything you've said. You've got to be aware of this as well, but it's being that grounded. I mean, sometimes, like, you can't avoid it either. Like, I went on Facebook and all I saw was like floods of people talking about 4th of October. And I just thought, my God, you all just need a remedy. I just wish I could all give you a really grounding homeopathic remedy, because it would sort a lot of you out. And
were people in the UK even talking about it too?
Not a little bit, but not so much. But it was just, I guess,
it didn't apply to the UK supposedly. So yeah.
We had our test, I think, last year. Oh, it was earlier this year, a similar thing. But I felt like there was more hysteria perhaps from the US folk.
Yeah.
It was similar in the UK. There was a lot of mass hysteria about it. But yeah, you can't help but be aware of it, whether you want to switch off or not. If you go on social media for work or whatever, you're just sort of flooded with these posts. And isn't health about being in balance and looking at things from a balanced perspective, not extreme? So that's what I love about what you've done for the end of COVID. So I'd like to talk a little bit about that, if that's okay. And I think, although it's like, from my perspective, although I think it's called the end of COVID, it's so much more than it's the end of allopathic medicine and the future. It's the way forward. It's so much. So anyone that's listening, like, can you explain a little bit about what it is? Because it's incredible. It's hard to do justice.
Yeah,
this is
a good question, because it's kind of hard. And thank you for that, by the way. Thank you for that acknowledgement. And thank you for being a part of it, obviously, too. You have a session on homeopathy during it that was incredible. But it's hard to articulate what it actually is, you know, because just, it is all the things that you described. It's a Trojan horse of sorts, in that it's using COVID as the example for what is done and what has been done throughout history to perpetuate this fear-based victimhood mentality with respect to health that is based in the pseudoscience of the germ hypothesis, and using, you know, every single aspect of the COVID operation, sort of analyzing each individual piece, and then from there sort of building off on other points in history and other topics that aren't directly related to COVID but come up as we're dissolving certain aspects of the COVID charade. As an example, like, you know, as you know, we go deep into the so-called proof of contagion, because that relates directly to the whole COVID narrative, right? And then when we show that, okay, there's absolutely no empirical evidence behind this idea that disease is spread via the fluids of a sick person, naturally what will come up then is like, okay, how do you explain bacteria? What about fungi? What about mold? Like, all of these other topics that aren't directly related to COVID that nonetheless come up. So we decided to do sessions on those too. And then sessions on measles, monkeypox, chickenpox, and all of these other things to sort of show that the entire, not just SARS-CoV-2 and COVID, not that just that was a total psyop, literally a psychological operation, in that there was no physical material threat whatsoever that necessitated any of these so-called health measures or anything that occurred over the last 3.5 years. But that also extends into HIV/AIDS. That also extends into the various so-called pandemics and epidemics throughout the modern era that we can, you know, speak on with a certain level of confidence. And the whole purpose is to really dissolve the fear. Like, I think, you know, going back to the truther community, we talk about going down the proverbial rabbit hole, right? We talk about that, and it's like the connotation associated with that is that it's like this deep, dark, hidden secret that we're uncovering that typically drums up more fear, because it's like, oh my God, this is what they're really doing. You know, like human trafficking rings, all the, and that stuff, I'm not going to say it's not happening. It likely is happening, and it's some dark stuff, but like the rabbit holes that I like going down are require radical self-ownership and self-responsibility, in that as you go down this rabbit hole, you realize with COVID, with HIV/AIDS, with the entirety of so-called infectious disease, and much of the way both the mainstream and the alternative approach health is based in a disempowering, fear-based paradigm. And it is based in, really, for lack of a better term, like I said, victimhood, in that, you know, when you understand that there is absolutely no empirical evidence that germs cause any disease whatsoever, you are forced in that case to realize, like, wow, I am in control of my health much more than I previously thought. Of course, like, this can be a very black and white statement. I'm not going to say that they're not spraying shit in the skies. They're not poisoning us in various ways that are a little bit harder for us to control. But this sort of moves the pendulum a certain way, where it's more of our health, much more of our health than we ever realized truly is in our control. And it's 100% our responsibility, irrespective of whether all of it's in our control or not, to do what we can to come to a state of vibrant health. And so that's what the end of COVID is. And, you know, I could go on and on. I've thought about this a lot on why it is important, because people say, like, what does it freaking matter if the virus exists or not? Like, can't we just focus on fighting medical tyranny? I'm like, we can do that, and we should. And that's why, again, during the end of COVID, we talk about the legal and lawful ramifications and aspects of this whole narrative, and sort of educating people on what could be considered a voluntarist perspective or voluntarist philosophy with respect to law and quote government, and understanding that, you know, that's also based in a fear-based conditioned paradigm, where, like, we believe, even those in the truth or health freedom community will look at the so-called authorities and say, you know, I'm not going to comply with that, but I am going to comply with all these other things on the basis of you have legitimate authority over me, rather than, you know what, I come to my own moral position. I'm not going to do that, but I am going to do that, even though you say it's illegal or unlawful, because this is my moral compass. And you, as a man or a woman, even if you call yourself, quote, government, have no right. You have no moral right to tell me, as another man or another woman, what to do. The only thing that gives you that so-called right is my individual and our collective conditioned belief that you have the right to dictate, give commands, and use force against us. And of course, like, it's much easier on from a collective perspective when we do that, which is, that's the whole point of the end of COVID, is to educate people on these things. And back to my original point, I know I'm rambling a lot, but we can focus on the medical freedom side of things, of course, right? That we should, and that's what we do during the end of COVID. But if we are approaching health from a completely flawed perspective, a completely reductionist, materialistic perspective that is based in a war paradigm, meaning that we need to kill the bugs, kill the germs, that is inherently flawed, then both the mainstream, of course, and the overwhelming majority of alternative approaches to health are completely missing the mark. And we aren't adequately exploring these other metaphysical aspects of health that sort of underpin some, or I guess there's tones of that during the end of COVID as explanations for what causes two or more people to get sick in the same space. But nonetheless, you know, we know that we have a measurable and observable human biofield. We, through the work of Gerald Pollack, Gilbert Ling, Veda Austin, Masaru Emoto, we know that there is so much more to water, or I guess rather than saying we know that there's so much more to water, there's so much we don't know about water that has major implications, not only on health, but on the nature of reality itself, especially given that we and every biological being on this planet or this plane of existence, whatever you want to call it, is made of water. Like that has humongous implications. And we are so myopically focused on this unproven paradigm of health that underpins virtually every health paradigm in the world right now. And that's a big deal to me. I think that should be a big deal to everyone. If we're completely missing the mark on everything, then we need to, as we dissolve that paradigm, and we need to educate more people on the necessity of dissolving that paradigm so that we can start exploring these new and very exciting and empowering paradigms of health. So that's in short, and that was my short summary of what the end of COVID is. That's the whole point. And we've had just over 110,000 men and women tune into it for free. And it's, you know, the feedback we've received on it has been incredible. Even for some people who hadn't really heard of the no virus thing before and are just now exploring it, they're like, wow, this makes total sense. And that's the whole point. We laid it out in a clear, concise, easy to digest way. Yes, there's a lot of stuff to sort through. It's over 100 hours of content, but that's the amount of context that is really required to dissolve this fear-based paradigm. So yeah,
it is. No, it's incredible. And to summarize it, you've done an amazing job with that. I'd like to sort of pick apart a few bits of people that are listening, because like some people listening might think, what, no viruses? So maybe we can touch on that. But I just want to, so I don't forget to say thank you for doing this, because for a long time I thought, I wish someone would have like a helicopter view of like the different modalities and kind of pull it together. Because I remember during COVID saying to my husband, oh God, you know, the homeopaths, the cranial sacral therapists, you know, the alternative practitioners, we're all looking at things from a similar way, but we're all saying it from our own hymn sheet, which isn't the same. We're all coming at it from a slightly different angle, but it's all that we don't live in a materialistic universe or world. Thank you for featuring homeopathy in it, because I still think it's the bridge, because it's a pill.
And of course. Well, I mean, it fits right in with the water thing. Like, of course, had to. Well,
people think they're taking a pill, you know, thinking, oh, like people often take homeopathy thinking it's like a supplement and then it works. And then they start looking into it and it's like, what? There's nothing in it. And then they go down that rabbit hole. So thank you for putting that in as well. But yeah, it's incredible. And I'd like to talk on your thoughts about the new health paradigm. But before we go there, people that are listening, and people do it in the homeopathic community, talk about still catching viruses or catching colds or catching this. So they might be thinking, nah, I don't agree with this man. What's he talking about? You can't catch viruses or you can't catch, you know, illness. Can you? It's hard to explain. Like, that's why you've done a whole like summit on this. But
you know, it's good, because I did this exact thing yesterday with two people who interviewed me who had never heard this before. So I think it's definitely more helpful if I have slides, which is why the end of COVID is so powerful, because most of the sessions are presentations. So it's like, oh, okay, that's what he's talking about. But I can explain it pretty well. So so people, even I did, tend to get lost in the weeds on the molecular details of things, right? And that could be argued forever, because of course, any virologist or molecular biologist could point at us and say, well, you've never been in a lab, you don't truly understand the procedures, you're just reading the procedures on paper, you haven't actually dealt with them, you're not truly seeing and peering into it. And like, you know, okay, that's valid. I don't disagree with that, but I'm still going to scrutinize this, because like when we paint this against the scientific method, it does not hold water. And we'll set that aside for a second. So without getting lost in the weeds on molecular details, we have a session during the end of COVID called the proof of contagion, right? And we tend to approach reality, and this isn't the only example of this. There's so many things that we're taught to believe and taught to accept as an irrefutable fact that when you actually analyze them objectively, setting aside your preconceived notions and what you're taught, you find out that, wow, that's actually, there's no evidence for that, or that's not true, or that's not as true as we've been taught. So we approach reality as if it's an irrefutable scientific fact that disease is spread via the fluids of a sick person. And I mean, virtually every single person on this planet, aside from hopefully now 110 plus thousand people who've watched the end of COVID and understand and watch Dr. Mark and Sam Bailey and Cowan and everyone else and Stefan Lonka, approaches reality that way, right? We approach it as if it's well established. But when we analyze the scientific papers and scientific studies that have been conducted attempting to prove that disease is passed via the fluids of a sick person using what would be considered natural means of transmission, right? According to that paradigm, right? The paradigm is that, you know, sneezing, coughing, like sharing and exchanging bodily fluids with someone is what causes you to become sick. And when we look at that, there are countless experimental attempts to prove that. And in every experimental attempt to prove that using what would be considered natural routes of transmission, it showed the exact opposite. And that may seem like a shocking statement to people, but as an example, and this one's a pretty well-known one, but I want to preface this by saying there are like dozens and dozens of examples of this. So during the Spanish flu, a guy by the name of Milton Rosenau conducted a series of experiments with 100 volunteers at two different quarantine stations who were not presently sick with, quote, the Spanish flu, right? And, you know, what we're trying to determine here is the cause of an observed phenomenon. So, of course, during the Spanish flu, there are, you know, millions of people dying, if the numbers are accurate, and, you know, I question that, but if there are millions of people dying, right, and they were dying of certain symptoms, and that he was trying to figure out what exactly was going on with this disease, with these disease symptoms. So he took these 100 volunteers and he injected them. So I wouldn't even consider that to be natural, but he took infected blood from Spanish flu patients and injected it directly into them. He took nasal secretions from Spanish flu patients and swabbed the back of these people's throats and put it up their nose. He had several of the volunteers go into Spanish flu wards and had the Spanish flu patients open mouth, cough into their face, shake hands, interact at close range. And each of the volunteers did that with multiple Spanish flu patients each, right? Turns out that the results of this experiment were that zero of the volunteers became sick. Of course, you could say that was a small sample size, or maybe they had, quote, antibodies already for the Spanish flu. We'd cover antibodies during the end of COVID as well. But the reality is this type of experiment has been repeated a number of times. And in every case, the results are exactly the same. There was one study that we highlighted during the end of COVID in which someone or a few people did get sick after being exposed to the fluids of a sick person. But what's interesting about this study is that a higher percentage of people became sick after being exposed to the saline placebo than those who were exposed to the fluids of a sick person. And then we can fast forward now to COVID, and we talk about this pretty extensively during the end of COVID. Well, the I guess what's referred to as the biology of belief, like referring back to Greg Braden and Bruce Lipton and Joe Dispenza's work, has a tremendous impact on our health. That's why the placebo nocebo effect is a well-established paradigm. I mean, we can manifest physical symptoms of illness through our own conditioned beliefs and our in repetitive and perpetual fear and anxiety. Like, that's pretty well established. And again, referring to COVID, there is a study put out by the CDC in July of 2021 that found the second strongest risk factor for death associated with, quote, COVID, which again is just a label of an amalgamation of several pre-existing symptoms that are not new whatsoever. It's not a, quote, new disease. But out of the 540,000 people that they looked at in this study, the second strongest risk factor for death was fear/anxiety-related disorders. I mean, that's pretty interesting, especially because that's people who already had a fear/anxiety related disorder. That's not accounting for what I would imagine to be the large amount of people who didn't have a formal diagnosis for fear/anxiety, but wound up in the hospital, wound up being put on remdesivir, the ventilators, the whole nine yards, and wound up dying. And so that is a huge aspect of this. And then the other thing that I'll say with respect to these studies is, there are people who will submit studies saying, well, this proves contagion, you know, like they got ferrets sick. Like, how do you explain that? But when you go look at these studies, this is typically what is happening. It's a ferret that's raised outside of a natural environment for a ferret, eating a completely unnatural diet under fluorescent lights in a perpetual state of fight or flight, disconnected from other ferrets, likely exposed to other experiments. And then they'll take unfiltered fluid from a sick person and inject it directly into the stomach of the ferret in absurdly high quantities. Or they'll like pour this unfiltered fluid from a sick person in the down a ferret's throat. Sometimes the ferret will get, quote, ruffled fur. And sometimes the ferrets will get pretty sick. But I ask, does that reflect anything that is happening in nature? Because you can even go back to the so-called human-to-human, quote, transmission studies, and even injecting, quote, infected blood from a sick person didn't do anything. And then, of course, when they've tried to do it using what would be considered natural means, even examples that we highlight during the end of COVID of taking fluids from chickenpox pustules and, you know, rubbing it on the skin of healthy people or putting it down the throats of healthy people, even doing that on kids, and nothing happens. So, okay, so then we have to go back to the drawing board on, well, given that this is now not only an unproven paradigm, it's been thoroughly disproven, and I can say that pretty confidently at this point, we have to go back to the drawing board on what causes two or more people to get sick in the same space with similar symptoms. What causes one kid to experience, you know, these rashes on their skin, and then another kid gets it at the same time? Is that coincidental? Yes, possibly. We can't rule that out. Is it exposure to similar toxins, similar eating habits, similar malnutrition, similar non-native EMF exposure, a unique combination of all those things, the emotional aspect of it, the belief aspect of it? And this is the problem that is perpetuated by the germ paradigm. It's reductionist, where people think it's one single thing that is the cause of another single thing. And is that the case sometimes? Yeah. If I get in a freaking car wreck and break my back, or like, you know, someone poisons me with a high dose of poison, or vaccine injured kids even. Yes, it is possible, but typically that's not how health works. It's a unique combination of things, many of which we can't even measure with our limited human capacity and limited human instrumentation, that lead to symptoms of illness. And then another piece of that is that so many of us have been conditioned to look at symptoms of illness as a bad thing. Now, I'm not going to say that like symptoms in all cases are good. Like when you're chronically ill, or you have like a broken back, or you're poisoned, right? Like, of course, I still think that your body's doing what it was designed to do, but I'm not going to say that that's a good thing necessarily to experience symptoms, right? But in the overwhelming majority of cases, symptoms are a good thing. It's a sign your body is doing exactly what it was designed to do to heal. But in this paradigm of health that we're currently in, both on the allopathic and the alternative side of things, building on that war model that we need to kill all the germs, we do whatever we can to, quote, take out the germs, or at least that's what we think we're doing. And then when the symptoms stop, we're like, ah, we fixed it. We fixed the problem. But all we've done is inhibit the body from experiencing the detoxification that it needed to experience, thus perpetuating the problem down the line. And then what happens is, when you keep on doing this, like, oh, you get a, quote, bacterial infection. Okay, give an antibiotic. Oh, symptoms stop, must be better. Of course, that bacterial infection's coming back again 6 months later. Quote, bacterial infection. It's not the bacteria that's the problem, but that's what we think. And then we do another antibiotic, then another antibiotic, then another antibiotic. And then all of a sudden, that kid, when he's an adult, has the worst gut issues ever. And then, oh, wow, this kid has cancer now too. That's weird. And it's our body again, even with cancer. You can look at it from a German New Medicine perspective, that it's an emotional thing. And I think that German New Medicine is a piece, but not the entire picture. And I think absolutely with cancer, there's emotional, metaphysical component to that without question. And German New Medicine is scary accurate in many ways. Mm-hmm. But I sort of look at cancer as our body packaging up all of those toxins and closing it in one area of our body. And then what do? We go get a biopsy, leaching those toxins back into our body. And then we're doing this whole process again, failing to realize that these are intelligent responses of our body to being perpetually poisoned, perpetually malnourished, in a perpetual state of fight or flight and fear, suppressing emotions, a unique combination of all of those things. And it's predicated on this totally unproven paradigm, which is why it's imperative that we dissolve it. So that's without getting into the molecular details. And of course, like I said, when it comes to two or more people getting sick in the same space, there are plenty of other explanations. Even, the human biofield, that's a term coined by the National Institute of Health to describe the measurable and observable biofield, energetic electromagnetic field that surrounds each of us. We know that, our phones have Bluetooth technology and can communicate via various fields and frequencies emitted to other devices. We have the same thing. It's built off of technology that's already inside of us. That's how, when women are around each other for extended periods of time, what's known to happen? Every woman talks about this. Yeah, we sync up on our menstrual cycles, right? Or women especially. And I think there's something with women where they are much more in tuned to energy. Kylie's crazy with this. That dude has bad energy. Stay away from him. And then I don't listen. And then I interact with that guy. And then she's like, I freaking told you when I get screwed over. But so my point is we absolutely have this subtle energy that we can pick up on. Is it far-fetched to say that when I reach a certain threshold of toxicity, I'm communicating to those who are in the same environment as me, who, because my body is brilliant, are likely experiencing somewhat similar environment as me, given that I'm around them all the time, that, hey, my body is experiencing a detox right now. It's going to be pretty unpleasant, but we're going to feel so much better afterwards because we're going to get all this shit out of us that we need to get out of us. If your body's reached a certain threshold of toxicity, you should probably go through this cleanse too. So then their bodies, through that energetic communication, start experiencing detoxification as well. And for someone who's like, no, you know what? I've been sweating a lot. I've been crying a lot. I've been expressing my anger. I'm not suppressing my emotions. I've been, going to eating a really clean diet, getting water. I've been using homeopathy, all these things. I don't need a cleanse. And then we look at that and we say, oh, they must have antibodies. But then we do a titer test on them. And they're like, oh, that's weird. You don't have antibodies. Oh, you must be a person who is asymptomatic carrier of this disease. That's weird. Or we come up with all these reification fallacies to reify this totally unproven paradigm. And it's we're just completely missing the mark. So that's, again, without getting into the details of virus isolation and stuff like that, which is important. And we cover that during the end of COVID. And I can talk about that if you want me to, but.
Well, thank you so much for that. I mean, there's so much to unpack there, and it is so complex, and it's not that necessarily contagion doesn't exist. It's resonance, isn't it? Is something resonating with you? Are you going to start producing symptoms? But from what you said as well, which I think is really important for everyone listening to understand, is the importance of symptoms. And sometimes we actually do need to get sick. And if you look at childhood illnesses, chickenpox, measles, mumps, all of those, whooping cough, those core childhood illnesses, they actually, from a homeopathic perspective, without going into too much detail, I don't know if you've heard of the term miasms, Alec. It's inherited. We have these core miasms that is inherited. We get that from our parents and our ancestors. And actually, these childhood illnesses clear those miasms. So for example, chicken pox is linked to the sauric miasm, which is all about lack and safety. Whooping cough is linked to the tubercular miasm, which these diseases or states have kind of left their energetic imprint on us. Mm-hmm. So if you think even about COVID, whether or not it's a virus or whatever it is, it's that state of fear that people lived in. Because even if you weren't scared of getting sick, I can say for a period I was scared of my liberties being taken away.
I think all of us were at some point because of the uncertainty of everything. Like, I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing, you know, like to some degree, fear is necessary to like alert you for a second, but it's the perpetual fear and anxiety that is bad.
And that whole, that state, so that sort of the COVID era will probably have left some energetic trauma on society as a whole. And it's, so we can sort of trace it back to like aura, which is actually from the scabies disease process. That's chicken pox clears that inherited, that we've ancestral energy. Whooping cough will clear to the tubercular miasm. So the fact that we vaccinate, or we don't against chicken pox in the UK, but in the US, the fact that you're blocking that process from clearing this, we've got this, nature is providing us with these mechanisms to rid ourselves of this ancestral baggage that we don't need. And we're suppressing it. It's like, my God. And when you actually understand about health and can see the bigger picture and just see what we're doing, it's the implications for why we've got this toxic shit show going on really isn't much of a surprise.
And then we're so shocked, right? Like when the entire vaccine paradigm, yeah, you know, is of course they've changed that. And then I don't want to go off on tangent, but I hate when people say, well, this isn't a true vaccine. I'm like, the other vaccine, like when you say that, you're implying that the other vaccines were quote true vaccines. I'm like, they were also toxic and absolutely horrible and did absolutely nothing except for either suppress symptoms of illness or poison you or both. Like that's, there is nothing, no positive effect from them whatsoever. So with the vaccine paradigm, it's, I don't understand like why we're shocked now that we are having all these kids, like I think one out of every, or 54% of kids today have at least one chronic condition and are having all these neurological issues, learning disabilities, all of these things. And we're shocked about that, but it's like, of course that's going to happen when we're suppressing the body from doing exactly what it was designed to do. And it really is both an insane level of delusion and arrogance coming from the so-called scientific community. And we could argue all day on whether it was intentional or whether it was based in like false paradigm or both. And I think it's a mix of both. I think the Rockefellers are corrupt, evil, sorry for lack of a better term, motherfuckers that like, I think that they absolutely knew exactly what they were doing. But for many of the doctors, they're not malicious. They're just conditioned into a false paradigm. But yeah, I'm almost at like a loss for words on how absurd it is. It really is absurd when you take a step back and look, which again is why it's so important to dissolve this false germ paradigm, because that's what the entire vaccination program is based in. And then we have the loudest voices in the health freedom movement who are saying we need quote safer vaccines. Some organizations even advocating for genetically identical vaccines that would be quote safer. Like that is absurd. It's completely missing the mark again. And that's the whole point. And that's why I think things like the end of COVID and the work that the both Mark and Sam Bailey do and Cowan and Kaufman is such an essential component to quote the health freedom movement. And I think that's why I continue pushing the end of COVID so much, you know?
It's so, people need to listen because it's free replay. So this will go out straight away because it's free replay until the 11th of October. And I want people to be able to watch it because, you know, you'll just watch it and you'll end up, you can get lifetime access, which you can buy because it is just incredible. Like the amount of content in there, it is phenomenal. So I want to ask to move on actually a bit to the way forward and the new health paradigm, because you cover that as well, which, you know, that's the bit that I love the most because it's
same, yeah, that's the exciting. Yeah.
Exciting. So can you, what's your view? You've got probably more of an overview because you've pulled together all these people from different backgrounds and different perspectives. So do you have an overview? What's your view on the way forward and the new health paradigm?
Yeah. So, well, it's what we just talked about, like through this whole thing. It's dissolving the fear-based conditioning surrounding the germ paradigm and the disempowering narratives with respect to health. And I think that, like, without, let me preface this by saying that people can sort of look at this from a very woo-woo perspective and think, oh, that sounds absurd, like Reiki and even homeopathy. But it's like we have to understand that there is, I guess, like scientific implications to this. Like, again, the National Institute of Health is who coined the term the human biofield. Gerald Pollack and Gilbert Ling are PhD scientists who are doing work with fourth phase water and showing that fourth phase water reflects back its environment. It can retain memory and hold memory and also become its own conductor of energy with certain electrical inputs and certain configurations. And that has humongous implications for our health. And things that sound far-fetched, like breatharianism, where people supposedly, and I do actually think that this is true, it takes a very attuned person to do this, but can survive off of sunlight, water, and breath without any food. And I would have thought before that that sounds absolutely absurd. But when looking into what we're made up of and how there's even evidence now that human beings have some, through melanin, form of photosynthesis where we literally receive nourishment to a large degree from sunlight. Like, it's more than just vitamin D. That's like just one small piece of what the sun does for us. It literally nourishes us on a cellular level, especially knowing that our cells are likely composed of fourth phase water. We are made up of water, two-thirds by volume, and then over 99% of molecules in our body are water molecules. So water is a huge component of health too, and I've been so fascinated with that. I just did a 15-day water fast with 1 day of juice at the front, 1 day of juice at the end, so 17 days total. And I gave update videos throughout the entire fast. And on day 13, I bawled my eyes out. Like, all these things that I had thought I had faced, there's still so much more for me to face. And it was really challenging, but also incredible because a friend of mine told me before the fast that I would fall in love with the feeling of emptiness. And you don't quite know what that means until you are empty of food and empty of emotions. And just sitting there, literally just sitting there doing nothing, I was in a state of bliss. And I wasn't like doing a certain breath work practice. I wasn't trying to feel that way. It was just, this is my natural state. And I'm like, wow, is this how we're typically all supposed to feel? Holy shit, this is sad that so many of us don't feel like this. This is how we're supposed to feel right now. And it was so impactful for me. And then days 14 and 15, the hunger had completely subsided. And I was sharing in the updates, like, I feel like I could do this for 30 days, 45 days, 60 days. The only reason I had to stop is because two things. The refeeding period, Kylie hates that word. She thinks it sounds weird. But the refeeding period, you have to be very delicate about, and you want to extend that out because you can't just go, like, eat a cheeseburger after that, or like even eat cooked vegetables. You have to be very delicate about reintroducing food for your body's digestion. So I had an event coming up about a week after that, and I didn't want to be like, a meditative yogi wanting to be by myself for the whole event, because that's kind of how I felt. I felt like a recluse in a way. But then the second thing is, Kylie called me to come home early because she, thank goodness, gave me the opportunity. I've been wanting to do this for like 2 years now, gave me the opportunity to go be by myself for this water fast. And then she, our kids were being kids. We have a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old. And she was like, okay, your time's up. Come back home. And I was like, all right. So I drove home 14 hours. And it was really interesting because the entire water fast, I was drinking reverse osmosis water that I would restructure, I would bless, and then I would remineralize with Celtic sea salt or Kintan marine plasma. And then, other than that, I was drinking water directly from a spring coming up from the ground. Those are the only two water sources I was drinking from.
How do
And
you restructure your water?
so for me, I use an analemma wand.
I've got one, it's brilliant.
It's crazy because that's another, and it just shows how, I don't want to go off on a tangent yet.
Yeah,
Let's
sorry,
set
yeah.
that analemma thing aside. I was going to go into like materialism. We look at that device and we're like, what the hell is this? Like this, but it really does. It has profound implications or in effects on the water. Anyway, we'll set that aside. But so when I drove home 14 hours straight, I was drinking, quote, spring water that I had bought from a store that was in plastic jugs that was labeled spring water. But like, and it, because I was so impacted by subtle qualities of things, given that I was only drinking water, I was impacted by energy in a very, everything became louder, right? Like it just, everything became louder for me. So I could literally feel the difference in my body drinking certain types of water, even drinking reverse osmosis water that I'd restructure and remineralize versus spring water. There was, I mean, this doesn't sound too crazy, a much more like natural, almost instantaneously grounding quality to the spring water. Whereas the reverse osmosis water that I would structure, bless and remineralize had a quality of feeling amplified, and not in a bad way necessarily. It was just that it wasn't as natural of a, like, it's hard to articulate exactly what it was, but I could pick up on the subtle differences of things. Right. And when I was drinking this store-bought quote spring water that was in a plastic jug on the way home, I was having to pee a lot more than I had been the last 15 days, which immediately was telling me like, oh wow, my body is not being nourished. My cells aren't being nourished by this water like the other water was. And by the time I got home, I felt so dehydrated, had the worst headache ever, was really groggy, woke up the next day in what would have been day 16 of just water, and was like, damn it, I can't continue. There's just no way. I think I've like reached the point, the threshold where it would probably be unsafe. But all that to say, had I not driven home and drank that store-bought spring water, I think I could have continued doing that for 30, 45, 60 days. And you hear stories of people doing that. And I really feel like that. Like I felt, yes, I had a little bit less physical energy, but I was so mentally clear, so spiritually connected, so connected to my body, myself, my surroundings. I mean, on day 5 or 6, I stand up paddleboarded for 4 hours. So it's not like I had insane amounts of physical energy, but I wasn't depleted to the point that I couldn't do anything. Yeah. And I think that like, that's the exciting paradigm. That's just one aspect of the exciting paradigm of health, that this is really dissolving all that is untrue that we've been conditioned to believe, to rediscover our potential as human beings and the abilities that we do have. And, you know, like we hear like the possibility of ancient yogis being able to teleport and meditate and, or not meditate, of course we can all meditate, levitate and do crazy things like this. And that sounds nuts, but I think that there may be some truth to those things. And even if there's not, even if it's just a total sci-fi fantasy, it's that we are so much more powerful and capable than we've conditioned to believe. And that's the thing, is it's all belief. It all starts with here and ends here. For those listening, pointing to my heart and or my head and my heart. And that's the new paradigm that we're coming into, especially as we dissolve this fear-based paradigm. So yeah.
Oh, amazing. What an amazing note to end on. And I think, it's all, everything you need is inside. And I said actually right at the beginning of my homeopathy session on the end of COVID that I actually truly believe that in the future, we won't need those pills, and because everything is already there. But right now we seem to, we've been programmed, we've lived in this materialistic world.
We're still caught up in the illusion. So sometimes it's helpful to have those little things that sort of trigger that which is already inside of us, right? Like that's all that they're doing. They're triggering or reminding us of who we truly are and the power that we already have.
Absolutely. So what are you doing at the minute, Alec? Where can people get in touch? What are you up to? What future plans?
So with the Way Forward's new membership platform, that's the other thing that's like I'm pretty stoked about, is we have a new membership platform that's based on a value for value model, meaning that you pay whatever you want to be a part of it. And that gives you the opportunity to connect with other men and women near you by just typing in your zip or postal code. That also gives you the opportunity to find like-minded, primarily holistic health-oriented businesses and shops near you. And then it also gives you the opportunity to get discounts on a number of holistic health brands, products, and services. So it's supposed to be just really an all-inclusive resource for people who are health and freedom oriented. And again, it's based on a value for value model. So you pay whatever you want to be a part of it, just in an energy exchange. And we have roughly, I think, 650 members, and we're continuing to grow. And I think we're looking to turn this into an actual app. Hopefully we won't get deleted from the app stores, but like, that's what we want to do, because we want to just be the resource, you know, the way forward for people who are health and freedom oriented to connect with each other, connect with businesses, connect with, you know, helpful tools, practices, and products, and just sort of be that all-inclusive resource for the health and freedom community.
It's an amazing resource, and you do so much. And yeah, you have live events as well, don't you? And talks and speakers on. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. And your
I'll have to do a live event in the UK so I can make an excuse to come out there and see you, see Don, Lester, David Parker.
Yes.
And,
Oh yeah. Yes, definitely.
And Patrick Henningsen, another friend of mine. Patrick Henningsen's in the UK as well. So,
have you ever been to the UK before?
I've been once. I've been once to the UK. Yeah, just to London. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Let's sort that out. And there'll be lots of people that would absolutely love to come and see you, because you you're doing a lot of talks on you in the US. I see. I'd love to come.
Oh yeah. You know, it's funny, because I said I was going to slow down after the end of COVID, but then like, I can't pass up speaking at like Anarchapulco. Like that, like that's awesome. Like, I mean, I've always looked at Anarchapulco like, oh, I wish I could go to that, but I could never really afford to pay for it myself. But now they're, you know, paying for me to speak there. It's like, wow, awesome. This is a dream. Like, and then it's funny, Weston A. Price Foundation, they invited me to speak at their event. But what's cool about that is it's in Kansas City at the Kansas City Convention Center, almost exactly 2 years after our event that we had in Kansas City at the Kansas City Convention Center, where we were kicked out for, quote, violating the mask mandate. And then we held the city of Kansas City accountable and won money back. But it's just hilarious because it's the exact same location where we were kicked out of our event. So I definitely have to open up my speech saying that here in a couple of weeks, because it's pretty funny. But yeah, I do a lot of speaking engagements and events.
The universe is giving a wink there. So yes. How's the best way for people to get in touch with you if they want to get in touch?
Or I would say check out the End of COVID. And I know Lisa has an affiliate link, so please click her link for that. And then thewayforward.com, and that's spelled the way and then FWRD. So thewayforward.com. And then, of course, I'm on Spotify, Apple, and all the podcast streaming platforms. I have a weekly podcast. So yeah, that's it.
Oh, thank you, Alex, so much for coming on. I know how busy you are, so I really appreciate you taking the time. I love catching up with you.
Yeah, you're awesome, Lisa. I freaking love talking to you. It's always a really fun conversation. So thank you for having me.
Oh, likewise. Thank you so much.